Hello, and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. It's episode 159, and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mouse from Mars, and joining me are the creator of the brilliant webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
He said he was going to go full ham, but I think he went full hard man there.
I flipped it.
Is Joe Bugner on the show? I don't know.
Yes, that voice you can hear there is the man who was the inspiration for the $6 Million Man. It's Mr. Tony Esmond.
Hey.
Hey.
You did a lot of super professional cough. You went, Tony, be quiet. And then you went, like this.
Well, you say semi-professional cough. It's because you were rambling on and I just went, Tony, just cough. And this week, it's not just us. We're also joined by a returning guest. Yes, we have a few. If we like people, we invite them back.
Yeah.
And yes, he's one of the brains behind Avery Hill Publishing. And he's an all-round diamond in the rough. It's Mr. Dave White. Hello.
Oh, you're getting me all emotional with that. What a lovely introduction. Excellent to be back with you, gentlemen. Excellent to be back with you.
Yeah. It's good to have you back, man. And thanks so much for your personal podcast running our amazing advert this week. Very nice of you.
Pleasure.
Messages from the Hill.
I don't know about that.
I forgot about that ad.
Yeah. Not sure we're going to win the listeners over there.
No.
Just a lot of bleeping and a foghorn.
Yeah. Yes.
Sums up the last 3 years, then.
Pretty much. So Dave's going to help us put the comics world to rights for the entire show, and he's also going to help us out with the main topic of conversation this week. We're not going to spoil it just yet. It's one that's been a long time in the making, and we'll get into it properly shortly. But before that, how are we all, gents?
Good, man.
Good, yeah. Good.
Yeah?
Yeah. Finally home and not in a hotel. Oh. I've been recording from hotels the last 3 weeks.
It's so good to hear your smooth, silken, galaxy chocolate-like voice.
Hard to watch Peter Rabbit yesterday, so it's nice to talk something that's vaguely normal.
Yeah. Did you enjoy it though, Tony?
No, it's fucking awful.
Right. I mean,
I was telling you all the way through, I'm thinking James Corden wants to sing in this. James Corden wants to sing. Of course, at the end he does a song. Oh, what a twat!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's a nuisance, isn't it? That guy.
Yeah.
What a nuisance. Just... That's the way to put it.
I don't know. He keeps on getting fucking films and TV shows. He really don't.
Michael McIntyre gets regular work, doesn't he? So I suppose it's fucking hope for anyone, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Or Mrs. Brown's Boys. I literally last night I was sort of scanning through the channels and I thought I want to watch something. And I thought, I thought it said something else, but it actually said Citizen Khan, and I accidentally clicked.
Oh, that's awful.
Oh my God! It's like Mrs. Brown's Boys as well. It's awful.
Oh. I laughed at something Mrs. Brown's Boys related a couple of months ago. It was on the front cover of The Sun, and one of the stars had been done for tax evasion in Ireland. And like The Sun, they'd done a cutout of her head and saying, oh, feck. I burst out laughing in the supermarket.
There's literally no difference between The Sun and Viz, is there? There's literally no dividing line anymore, is there?
Well, one does it with tongue in cheek, and the other one's just straight down the line. And that's what's so ridiculous about it. I've got to fucking walk by News International every fucking day.
Have you?
Yeah.
You ran past Dave the other day.
You did.
Yeah, so we're here.
I was going to try and chase you and keep up with you, Dan, but you were too quick. You were flying, mate.
Yeah. He was also naked.
Seems unlikely.
I was impressed, mate, running on your lunchtime. That was, I was just about stumbling to it too, I think.
Oh, we got an Itzy opposite my office now. Yeah, that's deadly, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know what isn't deadly, though?
Oh, no.
It's the fantastic selection of comics you can get on Comic House.
Ooh, so smooth.
Oh, smooth. Like, I don't know.
Cartridge.
Yogurt.
Smooth like yogurt.
That famous song, Smooth Like Yogurt.
I was trying to think of
that. What's the smoothest thing you can think of? What about yogurt? Yeah, good one. Yeah, song. Yeah.
Well, it's got fruit in it, you know, fruity bits. That's not too smooth.
What, you don't like yogurt with fruity bits in it?
I don't mind it, but it's not particularly smooth. Anyway, before we go off on a tangent,
oh Oh, Dan's done me.
He's absolutely done us both. Oh dear. And just as
what
tasty
is on
as
Comic
a
House this week?
You're doing Sam Walgreens as well. You're doing Sam Walgreens.
Yes. Anyway, where were we? Sponsorship ad. Yeah, Comic House is the indie comic marketplace with a difference. There's a huge selection of titles on their database. So if you self-publish, then you can list your book on their website for free. And when you sell a copy, they'll only take 1p commission. So, which is awesome.
And it's good.
You know, every penny counts in this self-publishing world. They have a features section on their site with loads of cool stuff. And they also have their own app, which we talk about a lot. And we use quite a lot as well.
It's I used it this week.
Yeah. And it's like Netflix for comics. I know it's a cheesy advertising line and I get stick for it. But that says it all, doesn't it, really?
Stuck though, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and for only £3 a month, you get access to an enormous library of digital indie comics. What have they got on there at the moment, Dan?
This is the way they came up in the order on the email. This is not like nepotism, but the first one is Vanguard issue 13.
Oh, here we go.
Super Friday part 1, Unseen Shadows, the Citric Arc, Neo Therithic, Arc Song, Surrealville, and Unseen Shadows, Wrath of God, which features a dude jumping with two guns shooting. So obviously that's great. And a new feature they've added is that you can now turn your device landscape and scroll the comic like so. So
very good.
That helps a little. I prefer to read it like that myself, so you can get the full, more of the page width on and then scroll it up as you read.
I get the pages along the top sometimes, and I do it that way because you can tap the top, can't you, and it comes up with the pages. Yeah, I do that quite a lot.
Because I've been to quite a lot of digital reading this week.
We have, haven't we? We've got some big digital talk later, haven't we?
I was blown. We were both blown away by one title. Fantastic.
Totally. You'll have to wait and see. You'll have to listen to the rest of the show. We apologise. Yeah.
No spoilers, but some cracking books to be talked about.
Hooked him in there. Hooked him in.
Indeed. I mean, to be honest, hopefully by now they won't have stopped listening. You never know, though. You never know.
You see that button just to the right, cancel download. You can do that.
No, if they're listening, they've already downloaded it, so it doesn't matter.
That's true.
Anyway, yes, so Comic House, find out more. There's a 14-day free trial you can do as well, which is brilliant. If you just want to give it a taste, and I think, like all good drugs, stay off drugs, it's not good for you. Don't do drugs. Drugs are for mugs. Yeah. Smokers are jokers. Do you know what I mean? You can have a 14-day free trial, and you'll be hooked. So you can dive headfirst into the amazing world of small press. So check out comichouse.com to find out more. There you go.
Very good. That was nicely done, Ed, that one. That was all right, that one.
Yeah, it was all right. It was almost, it was semi-professional, innit?
That German guy we had on a couple of weeks ago said, they're not too bad, your ads. I thought that was nice of him.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we're aiming for, isn't it?
Not too bad.
Yeah.
That's every week we speak to Pete Jean Paul, he gives us a little thumbs up and he says, that weren't too bad, lads. Oh, thanks, Pete.
Yeah. I think if you aim for mediocrity, you're going to be all right, aren't you?
Maybe one day. Maybe one day.
Maybe one day we'll make it.
Here, I did my first Patreon this week.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I've never done one before.
What, like pledged to a Patreon?
Yeah, pledged regularly to one. So I did Word Balloon for John Siuntres.
Oh, nice one.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he's palaver, isn't he? He's a good egg.
Yeah.
I've trying to rejig mine because I just don't know what to offer up to people that sort of contribute. Right. I do sketches most days, but it's kind of like I don't know what else to kind of... Obviously, you're getting the comic for free. But it's a difficult one. I was giving a guy $10 a month, but he was only posting something maybe once every fortnight, and I was like, his artwork's fantastic, but I can't really justify this because he's posting it elsewhere online as well. So
I've been listening to Word Balloon for like 10-12 years now, and he's so interesting, and John's such a nice bloke, and I speak to John. John has accidentally rung me a few times in his pocket, so I occasionally speak to John when he accidentally rings me, or we message each other. And he's a good egg, and he does it on his own. And I think, I felt, to be fair, he didn't guilt me into it. I guilted myself into doing it. I thought, all these years of listening, I can give him a couple of dollars a month, you know.
Yeah,
so
I think that's where
I went with it.
Nice one.
Yeah, there you go.
Nice.
Cool. So thought I'd mention that.
Yeah. And obviously, we did an early show last week, but. I was at the Comic Summit, the first Comic Summit.
Of course,
last weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which was great, actually. It was a real good day. Obviously, it was only an hour down the road from me in Cheltenham. And, yeah, it was just top-notch stuff, actually. A few of the names. I've made a little list, but I know I'm going to miss some people out. So big thanks to John and Lucy Locke, Nick and Alice Angel, Chris Imber, Jen Yilblad, Steve Tanner, Nikki Sue, Barry Nugent, PJ Montgomery, Sarah Millman, Shan Jefferson. First time I ever met Lauren, sorry, I didn't get your second name, who's the creator of a webcomic, Pure of Heart, who stepped up to join the panel I was on, which was, well, obviously you know my voice, it's you know, it's terrible.
Irritating.
Yeah, there you go. but apart from me, all the other speakers were top notch. Plus, it was nice to catch up with like Sam Webster and Alex Pipe Dream Comics, amongst others. Like I say, I've left a few folks out, but it was a good time. All the speakers from all the panels were really good, and it was just a good. I mean, that's what it was. It was like a 2 days of like panels and stuff, and just talking about making comics and. Normally when I'm at a convention, I rarely get a chance to sit and watch a panel. I think I've only sat to watch a couple of panels in my lifetime, one of which was the 2000 AD one that Tony did with Pat Mills.
Oh, the one where I was in, you're a furry, that one.
Yeah, that one. And people wonder why I don't go to panels.
Because I think Pat mentions furries, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And I go, hmm. And Pat sort of double takes me, and I point at you in the audience. It's about 400 people there, and you just go, "Fucking hell!"
That's a great moment.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you would say that, Dan, because he wasn't pointing.
Literally at you. Using your platform to abuse.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's all about you, Pat. Anyway, I'd like to point out he's a furry. The big news for you. Vince, is that they've announced a Rogue Trooper movie, and that is your favourite comic. Rogue Trooper.
I like Rogue Trooper. we'll do a show about it one day, about how much I like it.
Have you heard this story, Dave? I did a 2000 AD panel and some bloke dropped out. We ended up with two people, one who was a bit sort of, I'm going to say a bit too Christian. I don't think you can be a bit too Christian, maybe. But he did like to talk about Bible comics quite a lot. And so instead of the person who dropped out, we got Vince on. Sorry, man?
Bible comics on a 2000 AD panel.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the other bloke said, I've only ever drawn one thing for 2000 AD, I don't know anything about it. So all the questions went to Vince, who the only thing he could think of was saying, I quite like Rogue Trooper, I do.
Thing is,
it's not too bad.
Yeah, since that panel, my 2000 AD knowledge has increased like a millionfold.
Yeah.
But at that time, you know.
You could have done all right nowadays, I reckon. But
We're all over it now, aren't we?
Yeah, we're all over
it. It's a shame it wasn't Slane, wasn't it? I've got to tell you, I wish it had been a Slane movie. That's what we're all expecting, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah, true. But, the Comic Summit, obviously, they've started listing all the talks online as MP3s and on YouTube. So I'll pop a link.
On YouTube?
Yep. I mean, it's just audio. God. There's no video. It's just the audio.
Oh, that's a shame. Yeah. It still helps with the bank, but it's not as good, you know.
What, just hearing my voice?
Yeah.
So I'll pop a link in the show notes for anyone who couldn't make it. But it was just, there was just lots of talking about making, you know, lots of people coming together and sharing ideas and stuff. There was a couple of panels that I missed, so I'm looking forward to those going up.
Okay.
So,
can you take your good lady with you as well?
I did indeed. Yeah.
So she comes to that, but she won't go to anything I'm at. I'm beginning to suspect something.
She came to that because she knew you weren't going to be there. No. She's going to be at Nottingham in October.
Yeah, she always says that. No. She's not been to Nottingham since she wore my clothes that year.
The thing is, now that we're on Spotify, if you want to listen to us on Spotify, then please check us out. She's going to listen to us more. She's going to be aware of how much shade you're throwing in her direction. So you watch yourself, son.
I think very highly of your good lady wife, more than I think of you. There you go. How's that?
Yeah, that's true. You're not alone.
Are they going to do a regular?
I think so. It was a successful first year, all in all. I think it was a decent little turnout. Lots of people were positive and just talking about like making ideas. And I mean, I certainly made notes of things that I'm going to try. And some avenues. So that, you know, well, it was learning, and you know, loads of people had like notebooks and stuff. It wasn't like just listening to people talk about things we already know. Everyone was sort of talking about and sharing ideas. So, yeah, it was good. I can see it growing and developing as it progresses as well, because they're open to sort of suggestions and how they can make it better, etc.
I think they're missing a trick, not having the sort of Gosh Comics scene crowd as well, the LCAF.
Yeah.
You know, there was that's an angle that wasn't. But did it get mentioned to you, Dave? Did it or?
No, I saw it kind of. I saw some people saying some really positive stuff about it. Afterwards, but
and I think
yeah, I must admit I wasn't aware.
Yeah, but in the coming years, I think because obviously next year, I think that the bubble for it is probably going to expand because you know they're not going to have the same people like it should be with conventions. You don't really want to have the same lineup.
Speakers wise.
And I think that's something that they'll you know they'll bring in brand new voices and experiences every time, much like we do. Although Dave's a returning guest, so I'm kind of lying.
And we probably repeat the same boob jokes most weeks.
Yeah, I don't know how many people have heard that I like Rogue Trooper. You're full of dad jokes, aren't you, Tony?
Yeah.
Anyway. So that was great.
I used to play on the linoleum.
Pardon?
We'll get there eventually. It's all right.
Oh my word. Anyway, now, right, let's get to the topic on hand.
Oh, yes.
Our topic this week is one we're probably going to do a few shows on in the future. It's one that a lot of people out there would like to know a bit more about.
Go on.
I think a lot of us on this show as well. Or maybe you just want to see it discussed a little bit more, because we've only really skirted on the issue before, and that is the world of the comics pitch.
Now, you have a little phrase for this.
Oh well, I'm getting to it.
Oh yes.
Now, by the comics pitch, obviously I'm not talking about your table pitch. By that we mean when you want to take your idea, completed book or whatever you may have, and try to get it published by an external means, via like an indie publisher basically. Before you're shouting at your iPods or whatever. We all know that Kickstarter exists.
And it, we all know you can make it yourself.
Yes,
if you want.
It can help
you. Do that.
Yeah, yeah, it can help you get your own books funded, printed out there. But what if that doesn't work? Funding platforms aren't a guaranteed win, especially, I think, over the next few years. I'm not going to say the bottom's going to fall out of it, but I think people shouldn't expect a guaranteed win every time, unless you're being sensible about it.
And I think you've got to vary it. I think sometimes it's okay to kickstart everything, but sometimes you've got to think about letting someone else take the reins on certain aspects of it, because it's going to get it into other hands, you know.
Yeah, yeah, completely. And I think sometimes creators just want to take their work and get it published through someone else. What were you saying, Dave?
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, I was just saying publishers are looking at, and some big publishers are looking at crowdfunding as a source of funding books now as well, because... without getting too deep into it, you know, the distribution market is pretty antiquated. You know, it's a bit of a broken system. We've been talking to a couple of publishers who are really fairly big ones as well. IDW, I think.
Didn't they do an Archie book at one point?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, that was huge as well, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah.
Because that essentially just cuts out the middleman, the distributor.
It does. It can do.
Still
needs to get shops, which is, you know, the
different
big,
beast
distribution challenge.
And that's probably like why going, you know, getting your book through an indie publisher or bigger publisher or whatever may be the way forward. And maybe you just want to help them to get the word out, or maybe just get it printed, you know. And some people out there just don't know what they want from a publisher or what they want to do in the comics. So that's why we, in our limitless capacity for mediocre entertainment, have decided to...
You've written that down, haven't you?
Yeah. We decided to find out more about that side of comics. So here we are for the first ever episode.
Oh, yes. Yes, come on.
Smack my pitch.
Yeah, we went through that one. I'm so proud of you.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks.
I remember you texting me that this week saying we shouldn't do that one, should we? And we went yes. And so yeah.
Now I think, as it's the first one, let's start with the paint by numbers basics of it. So this is going to sound like a stupid question, but that's why I'm saying it, because I'm full of them. But what exactly is a comic book pitch? Who wants to take it away?
Ooh. I don't know. Dave, did you want to take this one, mate? You must have had a few through, didn't you?
Yeah, no, we do. It's coming to approaching publishers with... I think this is something that we'll get into. It's kind of what do you need format-wise? What kind of content do you need? What stage of development do you need to be at? to start pitching your idea. And we ask for no more than a page or two describing the story you want to tell. So, you know, just kind of setting out the beginning, middle, end of your narrative or, as I say, the story that you want to tell. And 4 to 8 pages of art to give us an idea of what it's going to look like. That's more than enough for us to get a look and feel of a book and understand whether or not it's something that we'd be interested in working with someone on.
Mm. So how do you get that? Do you just get that as like a one PDF sort of document type thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Keep it simple and keep it easily consumable from a size point of view and from a format point of view. We've had people come to us with finished books, which is kind of great. You know, if it's good work, then there's no problem with that at all. But you know, it's a lot of work to go into to complete a finished book without knowing if you know, going with the publisher is what you want to do, whether or not you're going to get any success with that. You know, if you've got it, great. But we need nothing more than a narrative outline and some look and feel of the art, and then we take the conversation from there.
Would that when someone turns up with a completed book, is that slightly problematic in the matter in case he wanted any input on it? You would say like, we don't want X or we don't want Y in it or something, but with the finished book, obviously it's all done.
There is that risk, and it is certainly something. I mean, we don't really have, or we don't choose to have, a huge amount of editorial input from the point of view of content. We'll certainly help if that's what the creator wants, but the way we approach projects is if we know the creator and we like their work, we trust them to tell the story that they want to tell. But you know, other publishers will certainly, and certainly some of the bigger indies will want that editorial input. As you say, Dan, if you've got a finished book and you've got to rewind a load of it, that's, you know, work's sake. And equally, just in the way that you prepare your pages for print and stuff, if you've you know, kind of drawn and scanned hundreds of pages and it turns out that, you know, we need them in a different format or so on, then, you know, you've done all that work again. So yeah, I and this is the really harsh bit, I'm going to read a 2-page summary and look at some art probably a lot more quickly than I'm going to spend reading 100 pages of someone's finished book.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, I mean, one of the things that fascinates me is, obviously, if you're pitching, just say, a graphic novel, because most of the stuff you do at Avery Hill is like completed sort of original graphic novels, isn't it, rather than your individual issues and stuff.
Yeah.
So obviously, someone will pitch you with 4 to 8 pages and the synopsis, and they've done all that. But as we all know, comics are the long game, and they take a lot of work. So obviously someone's given you 4 pages and they've told you that their book is going to be 100 pages.
Mm-hmm.
How does that work? When you say, good, go for it, you know, how does that work in terms of time scales? Does a person then get deadlines, etc., you know, to help push them forward?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is kind of goes back to the distribution kind of setup. We need a minimum of 6 months to start talking to our distributors about the books we're going to be releasing.
Right.
So, you know, a month or so ago, we went in to see our distributor in the UK to talk them through the books we're going to be releasing at the back end of the year. And once you've set that timeline, we need to stick to it, because we're guaranteeing to our distributors and the retailers that are buying from us that book's going to be available by that date. You know, we've got to have certain information ready for certain parts of the information process, so that the distributors' sales team can go out and talk to the retailers about the books. So once and a big part of what we do early is set that timeline. So once we get an idea of the look and feel of the book, it's a project we want to go forward with. Both us and the creator are happy that it's something we're going to do. Pretty much the first thing we do is say, right, let's put a timetable on it, let's put a calendar around it, because that's the most important part of what we need to feed into the distributors. So you need a view on that early. You need to know, you know, what your pace of work is.
Realistic.
Yeah.
And be realistic as well, you know, because there's nothing worse than overpromising and kind of not delivering. So we'd rather
you what's that Douglas Adams quote? He says he likes deadlines, he likes the noise they make when they switch past him.
I mean, I think for this week's topic of conversation, rather than doing the individual issues, we're probably going to be talking about pitching your original graphic novel, since that's Dave's expertise. Yeah. So, if you're thinking about doing a 6-issue series, we'll probably touch on that in the future.
Another time,
Because that's a whole different kettle of fish, isn't it? Because obviously, like you said, Dave, you're talking about, right, you've got a deadline, you've got a timeline to talk to distributors. If you're doing individual issues, completely different, because you're working to monthly schedules or everything like that. So that's a different ballgame.
Yeah.
So when you receive a pitch, Dave, do you like the shorthand that some people use and say, like, oh, this is like Deadpool meets Unforgiven or something like that?
Oh, I read that. Does that kind of thing fly with you?
That's just Deadpool in a cowboy hat. That's kind of that, isn't it?
But you know when people use that shorthand, does that work for you or not?
No, that kind of puts me off, to be honest. So I realize the currency in that, you know, those comparators are useful. We do try and do that. We do try and give comparators and, you know, this is a bit like something else to retailers so that they can immediately understand it. But
So those sort of things can help you when you're selling, you're on to the next stage, but it doesn't really hold much sway with you.
No, not really. I'm not looking for that kind of two-line elevator pitch. You know, I want to know a little bit more. I want to know what your voice is, and I want to know that your story is original. And I don't know. I just feel weird about those kind of.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, it's too simplistic for me, Dave. I see that as too obvious. You know, and a lot of people who say it's like such and such. I heard one which is it's like the Sweeney meets Buffy, and it was nothing like that. You know, the image that.
It's really hard to get that kind of two-line summary.
I'll hold my hand up. I'm guilty of it a lot of times, and I wish I didn't do it so much. I think if I was to switch it, I'd probably switch to, if you like this, you'll like this, rather than say, I don't know.
Okay. I think if you were flogging it over a table, I think
that's not a problem.
When you're approaching a publisher, I personally wouldn't use those terms. You want to be a bit more formal.
You've got to be original, haven't you? If you're trying to go to a publisher, you're trying to show that your idea is original, that no one's seen this before. I mean, let's face it, we've probably seen some version of every story already, but that's not the way you're selling it. You're selling it like no one has ever seen this book before, and that's why you need to publish it.
You're right, Dan. That kind of, when you're talking to someone for 20 seconds, you need that point of comparison.
Yeah.
And rather than, and as you say, Vince, it's like, you know, what kind of stuff do you like? Well, you know, you can draw a comparison that way. But I want to sense that, you know, it's an original story that the creator is really passionate about.
I agree. Yeah. Have you ever seen the movie? Have you guys seen the movie The Player by Robert Altman? Have you seen that?
Yeah.
And you know, there's the moment where they constantly pitch this movie, don't they? In it, there's moments where I can't remember the name of the actor now, from With Nell and I. Who's the guy from With Nell and I? Richard E. Grant.
Richard E. Grant.
He goes in and he says, right, act one, scene one, he says, it's raining. There's umbrellas. Everyone's opened their umbrellas. They're standing outside a prison and they're holding candles. Giving that with passion is kind of how they pitch movies, don't they? So they literally give scene openers. Is that how people do it to you? Do they say, look, it's going to be a girl. She works in an art gallery, but she's dissatisfied with her life. You know, is it that sort of thing? Or
yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm kind of looking for a couple of paragraphs summarising the story in totality, and then I want to see the beginning, middle, and end of the story you're going to tell. So you know, and you can get a fair amount of detail into that. That's absolutely fine. I want to get a sense that the narrative is pretty well formed, and that there is a direction to the story that's being told, and the creators thought it to that point before approaching us. Yeah. And I think that's important to have. It's got to be fully formed, even if you're just showing a snapshot of it.
Mm. It's all right to give a vibe of a scene that it opens with. Everyone can think of a great opening scene, can't they? But to bring that through to a good conclusion and also have that bump in the middle, I suppose, is an art form, isn't it, in itself?
That must be
Go on, Dan.
Go on. I'd say that the nuances of the story must be very difficult to convey. Like same one of the Tilly Walden books, the way I don't know how she, the pitch would come along from her books, but yeah. I think that would it boggles my mind to think how you'd pitch one of her titles, because not sure where I'm going with this. It's difficult.
It's the mood. It's the mood of a piece.
Exactly.
It's the visual and sort of emotional aspect of her books that you wouldn't get necessarily in a synopsis, would you?
Yeah.
So in that case, he's looking for kind of themes, topics that you want to cover, and a bit of an understanding of how that's going to be approached. I mean, that's absolutely fine. You don't have to, a lot of our books haven't got that, really obvious narrative thread. Some of them do, and they're probably easier to kind of summarize like that. But yeah, and that's where the art comes in. Having some example art, because you can take that and then say, right, okay, I get this. Doesn't have to be the first 8 pages, or 4 pages. That can be a help, because that first turn of the page, that first engagement is always important. But
sometimes stories take a good 10-15 pages to really build up that rhythm, though, don't they?
Yeah,
absolutely. And show the full breadth of what you're going to be committing to and what you're going to be creating with the art.
Should it be a bunch of pages that are in order, like say from page 40 to 45, or can it be different pages from different scenes?
I really don't mind. I mean, if you feel strongly that it's a key part of the narrative, you might want to show some sequential pages. But I'd rather get a greater overview of the look and feel of the book in its entirety. Yeah. So we're going to be doing a book with a creator called Shanti Ray next year, and she sent some character designs and character sketches and some. It's in kind of a utopian city environment. So she's designed the city, and that's I'm transposing those character designs onto the synopsis of the story and the characters that she's describing, and you start to form a picture of that in your mind, and you can start to take it forward.
It gives you that personality, doesn't it? I wasn't there when Hilda got pitched, for example, but if somebody gave me like a couple of sheets of character sheets from Hilda, you'd know what you were getting from that, wouldn't you?
Exactly.
Wouldn't necessarily have to be like a sequential story.
And colorways as well, because obviously your color palette and what you're going to be the way you're going to be creating is important.
Okay.
Yeah.
From a financial point of view, as to whether it's going to be black and white and all sorts of things for you guys as well, isn't it? I suppose.
That absolutely comes into it. But so Tim Bird's latest book, The Great North Wood, which we released a month or so ago, shows in a really, really deliberately limited palette. That is the feel of the book. That helps with the way that he kind of transmits his ideas and communicates the stories he's trying to tell. I didn't need to see hundreds of pages of that book. A couple of pages, and he just gave it. I was like, this is the colours I'm going to use, and this is what I'm limiting myself to. So anything that help communicate your vision of what you want the final book to look like, anything that helps communicate that is useful to have in there.
And on a sort of aside, that brings us on to another subject, is you do work, not all the time, but you do work with people you've worked before with, Dave, don't you? So presumably the pitch for their books is going to be slightly more relaxed, possibly in person, or would it be?
There'll probably be a pint of lager involved somewhere in that <Yeah. hotel.
laughs> But yes. Does Ricky get pitched every week, does he, or is that how it works?
He'll tell you he does. He takes it very seriously, and he takes a lot of time on it as well. I mean, once you've got that trust and understanding and knowledge of a creator's work, it obviously becomes so much easier to through that process. I mean, I think Alex Potts we put out his first graphic novel, It's Cold in the River at Night, at the end of last year.
Loved that, yeah, great.
That was literally a kind of a conversation in the pub after a book launch. That we'd all been to, and he said, I fancy doing a book about this and this, and he described it as a couple living on a house on stilts in a river in France, and the guy goes to for a coffin maker.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, yeah, we'll do that. That's fine.
I think the thing with people like Alex, and in a different way, people like Tim as well, who's both work I love, is their personality comes across in their work, doesn't it?
Yeah,
you know, important. So that's a real aid to pitching, isn't it? Because Tim's got this very sort of thoughtful side to him, and I think Alex has got this sort of very sarcastic sort of side to him, and he's a funny guy. You feel that through the work, and the pitch, I suppose, should translate to that as well, shouldn't it? You know.
Yeah, no, I think so. I mean, as early on in the process as possible, if we've not had a chance to meet with the creator up until that point, we'll do that. That's a big part of.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. Do people say, look, I don't want to send it to you, I'd rather meet you and tell you what it's about? Is that something you've had, or?
No, not really. No. I reckon I'd be a little bit weirded out by that.
That's quite frightening,
yeah,
isn't it?
Meet me in the alleyway. Yeah. Get in my van. Yeah. Get in the van.
Yeah.
Come to my house and be wearing, you know.
Yeah. That's the Avatar way of pitching comics, I think. Yeah.
So it's a kind of stuff.
Once we've had a chance to talk about it, yeah, the editorial part of the process is much better done in person. Mm.
Yeah, okay. Sure. Yeah.
So have you kind of had a pitch in, Dave, where it's really kind of like turned you off and you thought, no, I'm not doing this? Is it like they made a particular error or the way they've approached you that doesn't work? What would you say?
Yeah, so there's a couple of, I mean, I kind of made some notes. There are a couple of really key things about approaching a publisher. First thing is compare your work to their output. Can you see your book in their catalogue? Because if someone approaches us and, you know, it's not something that fits in with our, you know, kind of what we've put out previously or the look and feel of our work, it's kind of obvious they've not really done their research.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it might just be I'm going to hit 20 publishers and see what works. So if there's obviously that lack of understanding and lack of research, that's kind of an instant. That's not a great reaction for me.
No.
And the other thing is, and kind of almost as important as the pitch document itself is the email you cover it with. So you know, I've had emails in where they've got, and you know, my email address is dave@averyhillpublishing.com. It's not hard to work out what my name. I've had people, you know, dear Gary, and it's just like, you know, it's a copy and paste email. And like they'll kind of say, I really like your books, and they'll get the name of the book wrong. They'll try and call out a book that they really like, and they'll get the name wrong, which is, you know, it might just be an innocent mistake, but that to me feels like it's a volume thing rather than a chosen approach to us as being potentially the best fit for their work. So if you're not that familiar, don't pretend you are with the publisher's output. And you know, just you can tell very early on when someone's not being, you know, perhaps being a little bit disingenuous about why they're approaching you. So and proofread it, because if you can't proofread an email, I'm not feeling great about, you know, your ability to keep a project together. So I mean, those are a couple of things that you can really, and you know what it's like from anything you do in life, if there's something, a sloppy mistake early, it's a turn off, you know. So be really, really considered about that. Be honest, do your research, know that the publisher you're approaching is, you know, going to be a good look and feel for your book, and you know, don't try and blanket emails are obvious, copy and paste emails are obvious. If we're going to be working together on a project, I want you to take the time to write me an email, you know?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree.
So, like, from, like, publishing, like, what do's and don'ts, like, the basic do's and don'ts? Because obviously you just talked about, like, the emails and stuff there. Mm. If people just have five do's and don'ts, this sort of thing, you know, the very basics of it. Obviously, you give a decent email,
mm-hmm.
A PDF with some artwork, I'm guessing, yep. and a synopsis.
Yeah.
I think in some ways we should clarify for some people how much that entails. Obviously, Dave, you said at the beginning, you don't want the whole thing written out, and you don't necessarily want paragraphs and paragraphs, but you you really need to know where this story's going to go, isn't it? It's very important that, that people have figured out the entire story before they've even come to you.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, it's a disaster for us if we get halfway through the project and we, you know, it's not going to, we find out we can't finish it, you know, or... Yeah.
Have you ever had any situation like that yet, touch wood?
No, touch wood, we've not. I mean, we've had a couple of people get close to deadlines. I mean, that's life, you know. Yeah. We all know how much time and work goes into making your books, and there's plenty of things that can get in the way of that as well. So, and that's why we've got deadlines, and that's why we agree early on, is so that we can, you know, we can... if it looks like something's going to slip, we can talk about it and work out a plan around how we accommodate it. But I think the way we approach it, and the way that we try and get that understanding of the extent and of the project early on, hopefully means we're not going to get into that situation. But as I say, for a publisher, that's the biggest nightmare.
Yeah.
Things aren't going to come together as we planned because of all the stuff you have to put around it. And all the stuff we do in the background to make sure that the readers, retailers, our distributors are ready for it when we say it's going to be ready.
Yeah.
Once you pull that trigger on it, it's a countdown clock, I suppose, isn't it?
With that in mind, though, from a writing perspective, I mean, obviously you've got to be able to tell the publisher you're going to the ABC of your entire story and how it's going to end up. But how much of it do you think to all of us, like, how much of it should you have actually written, like, script page wise? Do you think you should have a decent chunk of it written before? I mean, you don't necessarily have to tell the publisher. You don't need to tell the publisher how much you've written of it. But what do you think is a good plan to have, like, of your story written before you even get to that stage?
Well, I mean, so everyone works differently, don't they? So, Rachel Smith, who I know has been on the show, and we've been fortunate enough to work with Rachel on a couple of books. She writes an entire script. That's her starting point.
Okay.
And she'll send us that. And she'll say, this is the book that I'm thinking of doing. Other people...
Did she do that with the first book that she ever did for you?
I think she did, you know.
Was that The Rabbit, the first one?
It was The Rabbit. So very early on in the process, Rachel will have a full script. And that's her starting point. Others, might not. Tim makes a load of notes. And just from his various sources and ideas, and then he pulls it together in the making of the book. So that's kind of stage two. So once we've got, I've got a look and feel of the book. We might have exchanged a couple of emails to make sure that it's a project that's right for us to work with. I'm pretty early on, depending on the timing of it. If you say, right, I need a year, okay, well, you know, tell me when you're ready to have a next conversation, you know. If we're going to be working on, you know, kind of a 6-12 month schedule, I'm going to want to see that pretty early on.
In
the way that you do it, because as I say, everyone's different, but I want to see the next stage in the developmental process pretty early on. But that comes in kind of the first set of editorial contact. So I don't need that for a pitch, but I mean, you're sending your book out there to get for someone to publish it. If you know, so you're hopefully going to get a quick response from someone, and that conversation is hopefully going to move really quickly. So you've got to be ready for it to move.
It's the beginning of an ongoing communication, isn't it? Really, an ongoing and forward. Yeah.
But you should be well past the point of, I've got an idea about a book. You think you should be well past that, shouldn't you?
Yeah. Absolutely. You've got to, I want to see. Or we can develop it together. If it's a really, you know, if it's an idea that just grabs me and the art's beautiful and you want some editorial help with that, ask for it. And that's kind of the other thing that I was thinking around in kind of the covering email. Have, and certainly in kind of selecting the publishers you want to approach, have an understanding of what you want from the publisher in the process. So if it's just, do you know what?
Yeah, interesting.
I just need to get to your distribution network. Or I want an editor to help me with this. You know, as early as you can in the process, and if it's in a pitch, all the better, you know, in the covering email, just so we can get an understanding early, you know, what the process is going to look like and what kind of input they want, the creators want from us as well. If it's not in the pitch document, I'm asking that in the first email. You know, what do you want from us in this? So it gives me when a creator can kind of look at it in that context, again, it gives me a bit of comfort that they've thought about the process. They've thought about why they want to work with a publisher. They've thought about why they want to work with us. And they've thought about what they want from their book. So it's not just, I want to make a book and publish it. I want to make a book because I want this exposure. I want to achieve this. I need to take advantage of your marketing, your PR, your distribution. I need an editor.
Do you get people who come forward and say, right, I want this much in it, sort of money way? Do you get that at all? Or
no, we've only got one deal. So
and
we talk about that. That's in the first email as well from me to say that these are the terms that we work under. This is what we can offer you. If you've not told me, you know, if you want editorial, I can be every step of the way. It can be a check-in, you know, process. Tim just turns up with finished books, and obviously we trust him to do that now. But and that's it. He just emails me the finished book. I tidy a couple of bits up, and it's normally good to go.
Yeah,
brilliant.
Other creators want a lot more help, which is absolutely fine. But it gives, as I say, it gives us comfort that you've thought about your project, if it feels fully formed, B, approaching us in particular, why you're talking to us,
and
you understand what you want to achieve from the project, because that's the most important thing for us. We should only be working with you if we can add to your project, to your success of the book.
Yeah, I think people have got to realise that you don't have to go with them. You know, you've got a certain idea about Avery Hill, and it's your baby, and if you want to do this, they're probably going to be lucky to get, you know, that you'll do it for them. But it's not, there shouldn't be any demanding, shouldn't there? You know, do you ever get people who are a bit bitter and say, you're turning down a gold mine there, my friend, or something like that? Do you ever get that? Or
occasionally,
I'm sorry about that email, Dave. It was, I was drunk.
Vince
and his cat army, he'll never get made. Sorry, David.
Send me one. That one, Vince. I like the sound. Yeah, occasionally. I mean, we try as far as possible, and it's not always. We haven't always got time to do it. But if we're saying it's not a project that we're interested in, I try and give some kind of reasoning why. I try and give some feedback that hopefully might help the creator find a publisher that's a better fit. This is kind of something else I wanted to kind of touch upon. If you do get rejected, I mean, that's, you should absolutely. I mean, it's a big scary process. You know, A, putting your work out there and asking someone, you know, almost for their, and it's not this, but it can feel like this, asking for someone's judgment on it. So if I reject a project, there can be loads of reasons. It might not be, as I say, the look and feel of the books we like to do. Or it might be that our schedule's fully committed for the next 2 years. I haven't got room. I can't fit it in. Or the timing of it just doesn't work. Or, you know, there's loads of reasons as to why it might not be the right project at the right time. So don't, and it's tough, I get this, but don't take those rejections.
I get that. I mean, even in the limited role I have at Nobrow, I get people writing to me and said, I've got this brilliant comic ready to go now. Do you think they'd be interested? And my answer is, I've seen their slate, and it's an 18-month projection.
Absolutely.
You know, don't expect your book to come out in, you know, the next year.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, and even if that's if they liked it, you know. Yeah.
And that comes back to the finished book part of it as well. You've got to stay, the creator's got to stay engaged in that process for, as you say, Tom, for, you know, kind of a 6, 12, 18-month process whilst the book gets into the schedule, gets into the distribution network and so on. It's kind of hard to be enthusiastic about something you created a year and a half
that long ago. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Because you'll be working on other stuff, and you'll be into other stuff, and you'll be living and breathing that. So
I've had that from a sort of personal view. I've had that with Cockney Kung Fu, because being the only one in the team who just did the writing, I'm not currently engaged in the creation of it. You know, that's kind of gone over to Nick now. So that's why I'm writing these little short stories, just to keep up the sort of almost like the contact that I have with it. That I'm still sort of not in a rude way, touching it somehow, you know, from a distance while it gets created.
Yeah.
And I think there is that. There's so much that you think, oh, I've done that, it's moved on. Almost don't want to hear about it sometimes with some projects you write. And so I sent a project off to a creator about 3 years ago, and they just started on it.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, God, what on earth did I write in that? I can't remember.
So exactly. So just from that point of view, I mean, it's not impossible, you know.
Yeah.
We need creators to be engaged with the book at the point of publication, because it's a big part of the success of the book to have the creator involved in. You know, there'll be interviews, there'll be, you know, signings, there'll be launches, and you know, it's a big part of the process for us to have the creator involved in that and be infused around it. So if it's something that you've moved on from, it's kind of harder to summon up that enthusiasm. So that can kind of help as well, just from a timing point of view, to be as close as possible to finishing the book to it actually being published.
Yeah, I think from slightly off subject is, as the point of view of someone who has pitched work to people, and I've heard, you know, I've got great responses to some people, but some people, I think, fall down from not being just a straight shooter around it, which I know you are, Dave, but some people, they, you know, they promise to get back to you, or they, you know, or they don't, but, you know, and you submit these pitches and they're like really interested, and you know, how many times do you chase it up? You know, it's a weird one, isn't it?
Yeah, so yeah. Absolutely chase up. So this is something I was wanting to touch upon as well. We try and get back to people as quickly as we can. Sometimes we're really busy. Sometimes it takes a while. I'd love to be, you know, a lot. I'd love to get back to people quickly. Sometimes we just don't. And so follow up. Leave it a couple of weeks and just a nice email. Just wondering if, you know, you received it, had the opportunity to look at it, would love to, you know, get some feedback. That kind of email, not only does it show that the creator's invested and they value, you know, the conversation and the dialogue and moving it on, I want to know that the creator's enthusiastic about their projects as well. So I actually don't mind being chatting, not every day, you know, don't
come back here. We'll give you a home address out at the end of this.
And that's going to get a little bit wearing after a while. But absolutely. Maybe a couple of weeks, and then you know, maybe one more. If people aren't coming back to you after that, you've probably got to take that as a little bit of a sign. Unfortunately. But I mean, if people aren't coming back to you, if people are rejecting, and you know, sometimes it's just going to be a one-line email, say it's not a project we can move forward on at this time. That could be any number of reasons. So hopefully try not to let that be a disheartening part of the process, but at the same time, take the opportunity to maybe re-examine your pitch. You're not getting the connection you want from people, you know, go back and take a look, maybe take some advice from someone you trust, send it over to them and say, look, this is what I've been sending out, what do you think? Is there anything? So that kind of, even if that editorial voice from someone, you know, who you trust, whose work you like, who's worked on other stuff, it could be anyone. It could be your mum, you know, someone whose advice you trust. Just to get that second opinion on it and a fresh pair of eyes, because they might just spot something that can improve it. So you know, just because you've created your pitch document, if it's not getting engagement, then take a look at it. Change it. You're not changing your idea. You're not changing your book. You're just changing the way that you're presenting a very, very concentrated snapshot of it.
Yeah.
I want to, just to be fair, I mean, I have to say, Dave, you're probably the most prompt emailer back, certainly as a reviewer, of anyone in the sort of limited UK publishing that I'm in contact with. But I have to say, some people, I work in a job, I think all of us do, where if you email someone, you expect to hear back from them if they're at their desk. The next 8 hours. You know, it'd be nice to hear back from them, even if they're just looking to find out what you've asked for or something like that. In the publishing world, that can go fucking weeks, honestly. You know, I have sat there waiting for replies to pass on to other people for weeks around some companies, you know. I really think you've got to be patient.
I'm guilty of that on occasion, Tony. Yeah,
well, we've talked about this dude before. Some companies are pretty flaky, I've got to be honest with you.
Yeah.
We don't see it from the outside, but behind closed doors, you think, fuck me, what do these people do?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
I mean, but understand from our point of view.
Yeah. No, I don't mean you, dude, at all.
But like I say, I'm guilty of that. I'd love to say I'm not, but on occasion, I've been guilty of that. But, you know, there's me and Rick doing it. Side of our day jobs, and we've got Steve, Kat, Sarah helping us, but you know, we're not at our desk 8 hours a day waiting for your email.
So yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it might take us a little. So you know, temper your expectations of that if you can. I mean, you know, you've sent it out. You're excited. You want to hear back. I absolutely understand that. But you know, don't get disheartened if it does take a while. Don't get disheartened if you have got to follow it up. Don't get disheartened if the answer's not the one you want. Mm. It, as I say, there can be any number of reasons, and it's an opportunity to maybe look for another publisher that you could work with.
Mm. Yeah.
It can be a sort of a long development process, can't it? Pitching and stuff, which lends me to this question, which I think people should think about. Certainly writers out there, sometimes if you're writing something, you've got an artist on board to do it, and you know, you've got this amazing artist and they've given you a couple of great pages, and you know, you think the book is going to be amazing. It's given to the publisher. That may take time, and I think you always have to be aware of what your artist is doing or what they're taking on, you know, because an artist isn't going to sit around and sort of wait for this pitch to go ahead if someone else comes to them with something which is good to go.
Yeah.
And you could have it like your pitch finally gets accepted and you go, all the book's on, and your artist could say, oh, I can't, I've just contracted to do something else.
Yeah.
Which sounds like a nightmare now that I've just said it.
Yeah. They can't sit around for months on end waiting to see if a pitch went through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's a jigsaw puzzle of a career almost, isn't it? You know, yeah. You've got to kind of make everything fit where it can. And that's only if you're lucky.
Mm.
Yeah.
But yeah. That's an early part of the conversation. So when, you know, my expectation is I will be ready to have it go to print by such and such a date, or I'm working with an artist who's got availability until, you know, then. And so I, as long as we're being honest and open about that, as long as we're talking about it, that's absolutely fine. If it's a project we're going to work on in 18 months, that's okay. I just need to know that, you know. So
if
that communication, not necessarily, you know, nailed down to that level of detail to accompany your pitch, but that you should be prepared for that, because as I say, fingers crossed, things are going to start moving pretty quickly for you. So a publisher is going to be asking those questions and want to you know, kind of understand what it's going to be like as early as possible.
Yeah,
and I mean, even I know who are on time and who aren't. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
In the sort of UK small press scene, as a reviewer and you know, working for Nobrow, I know who is a guaranteed on time and I know who isn't. Yeah. You know, if someone says to me, what do you think of this artist? And I'll go, yeah, it took him 3 years to do his last book, be careful. Yeah. You know, and the word does get round, I think, sometimes, you know. People got to remember that. It's all right being a bit flaky and thinking it's quite cool being a hipster and being late with everything, but it will ruin you, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, would you say that working with independent and small press publishers is very much on both sides the art of like keeping promises as well? Because obviously if a publisher says to you, right, the book's going to be published on this date, I need to see this and this, you have to keep up your end of the bargain. Of course you do. You need to give them what they need. But to flip it on the other side, that publisher has to give you equal in response, haven't they? They've got to.
Oh, yeah.
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 There may be publishers out there that won't necessarily do that. Which could be frustrating, and maybe some projects out there have fallen apart because of it.
Yeah.
But it
certainly happened to me, dude. I got asked to do something and then it never got followed up on. And yeah, there's certainly certain projects that have fallen apart.
Yeah.
I can guarantee that. Yeah.
I obviously won't mention any names, but I know, you know, people that have committed to books and produced the books, and it's just not, the publisher's not done it. They've just not published it. Which is, you know, guess what? Those publishers aren't doing a lot anymore because that word gets around, you know. So,
With that in mind, if someone's done that, I'm guessing they've signed on the dotted line that publisher, they kind of own that work, don't they? So it's not like if the publisher hasn't published it, you can't go, well, fuck you then, I'm going to take it to do this, because sometimes you can't, can you? If you're
a bit stuck in limbo, aren't you? I know.
Yeah.
And that also applies to agents and stuff. Agents will, you know, will you are tied into an agent. If you want to leave an agent, there's like a calling off period sometimes.
I mean, our standard contract has got opportunities for so you're granting a license to the publisher to print your book. You own your copyright. You should never give away the copyright. Yeah. You should never give away any other rights for that matter. But But our contract grants us a license to print the book digitally and in hard copy, physical format.
Okay.
But from the point of delivery of the print files to us, we've got a certain window to publish the book. And if we don't do it within that period of time, the creator can cancel the contract and get all their rights back. So, you know.
Yeah.
And okay, that's good.
It's only fair to do that because it's exactly as you say. Listen, you know, we've got a contract. We're not going to sue each other. You know, that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The purpose of the contract that we put together is just to set those expectations.
Yeah.
And give each other a you know, kind of, this is what I'm going to do for you. This is what you're going to do for us. And at the end, we'll publish a beautiful book and it will be massively successful, hopefully. So it's just about understanding. And again, that's probably stage two after the project's been initiated. But we share our standard contracts early on, so the creator knows what the deal is.
We've mentioned this before with writers and artists working together. That contract, obviously you get the legal backing, but also so you're putting down on paper what your expectations are from each other.
Yeah, you're setting the rules.
Yeah,
the rules of the game, and it's important to know that because. As we say, from a creator's point of view, you know, you can't have your project in limbo for periods of time because that's no good to you either.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. It is setting the ground rules for me. It's like you've got to explain to each other and be completely honest with each other, 100% honest with each other about what you expect. Yeah. I think people who go, oh, he didn't do that comic, did he? He must be getting sued. How often is there litigation that takes place in the comics world? Yeah, I would suggest probably very rarely. Nobody's got the time nor the money nor often the inclination to go that far with it. But I think there's that ground rules, which is extremely important, isn't it? And it's interesting that you do proper... I take it you've had a brief, who's had a look at those contracts, have you, Dave, presumably? Or...
Well, it's kind of what I do for a day job. So
right, okay, cool.
So we were able to do that. And Tim Bird's wife, April, is also a lawyer. So she kind of... took me apart on a couple of Tim's contracts, just destroyed me. So it was actually really useful just because we got it in better shape. And like I say, probably, you know, it's only at the top end of the industry where there's, you know, kind of probably a fair amount of money involved that things are progressed to that level. You know, as I say, we're never going to do that. Of course we're not. But it's more just saying, look, this is what we're agreeing to do.
Mm. Yeah,
and we trust each other to do it.
When you get like a pitch proposal, do you get people doing like cover ideas in it, a cover mock-up? Do you like to have that? Because one of the things I noticed when we were going through this, I went on Image Comics, their submission page. Of course, everyone thinks that they'll submit to Image and they print everything, but that's not the case at all. And they're very clear on their submissions page. But I'll put a link in the show notes. One of the interesting things that they put for the pitch document, like have a cover mock-up, and they say this lets us know whether or not you understand the market and gives us a good barometer on your design sense. With creator approval, this may go through a redesign if we decide to acquire your project. So you want to kind of be as it's got to be professional as possible, hasn't it, when it comes to you guys? You know, you don't want some slapdash PDF that's just thrown together in PowerPoint, and then you know you've got to give someone your best.
I'd love to do a pitch on PowerPoint.
He's in paint.
Just meet Dave in a pub, and then just like
project it on the wall. This is my idea. They're umbrellas.
A couple of beers, it'll be fine.
It's just a massive slideshow of Tony's holiday.
Oh, sorry about that picture being in there. That was an accident.
How did that get there? And then just leave it for a good 2 minutes.
I just stare at them. Look them in the eye. Stare at them. I mean, I don't necessarily need to see the cover straight away, but it's a big part of... Yeah. So,
I mean, they're mock-ups, aren't they? You're not asking for the final product because everything will develop and change as it goes on.
Yeah,
but...
and not everyone's a designer. You know, just because you you create comics doesn't mean you're a designer as well. I mean, that's an entirely different skill set if you can do it.
Yeah, we've talked about it many times on this show that, some people don't necessarily get that.
Fortunate that most of our creators do, but it's but that, again, that's fairly early on in the next part of the process because our distributor wants to see a cover early on so that they can start showing
interesting
So that has got to be part of the early package. But no, I'm not dead set on that, I must admit. I can see, you can absolutely see the thinking behind what Image is saying there. But yeah, at that stage, yeah.
From memory, you haven't done a sort of catalogue of Avery Hill, have you, Dave?
Yeah.
Not a sort of a handout one. Yeah, okay.
But we're getting printed for retailers.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So that our distributors can take them round when their sales teams can take them round and physically show the buyers.
Does that include books that are going to be coming in the next 6 to 12 months, or is it just your current product?
Yeah. So we do one between 6 to 12 months. We do a US catalog and we do a UK catalog.
Oh, right.
And that's got all of our new releases that in the next cycle of the distribution process, and obviously our more recent and kind of historic books as well.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's important. I mean, we find it really important to do because it's just so much easier to communicate.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I used to work in Waterstones years ago, and I used to have to deal with reps coming in, and then they would pitch books and stuff, and you say, yeah, I'll take 10 copies of that, or
I can totally see you, Dan, like Daisy Steiner from Spaced. You know, when the person walks up to her and says, could you point me
what,
in the
bogling?
Direction? No, can you point me in the direction of the self-help section? She just goes, fuck off.
To be fair, anyone who goes to that section does need to be told to fuck off, those folks.
I had remember being there once and someone came and said, I was looking for a book. It was blue. It was on that table about 3 months ago. You just sort of look at them like, what should I do with that information then?
Razzle.
Yeah.
Can you get that in Waterstones now? Bloody hell, they've branched out.
I wish you could.
So Steve Walsh, who used to work in Gosh and Does does some sales stuff for us.
He's an old boy at my old school, Steve.
Oh, is he?
He's a good egg. Like him a lot.
No, he's an absolute diamond. But he used to work in the Waterstones, and some of the stories he tells is just hilarious. I mean, I won't steal his thunder, but it's just the people that come in there and some of the things they ask for is just
it's
outrageous.
Fucking unbelievable. Yeah.
off Waterstones, back to the pitching. And another thing that when people have pitched to you, do people talk about formats? Because obviously you don't just print like a standard comic size book all the time. Your books come in different shapes and sizes and all kinds. Do people normally come up to you and they're very clear about this is going to be a square book, 52 pages, blah, 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 blah? Or is that
something
you discuss?
It's going to be an 8-page fold out at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love that level of detail. But not necessarily committed to, but because again, it gives me an idea that you've thought about it.
Like you've got a vision, haven't you, of what it's going to be?
Mm. Yeah, and so for us to be able to decide that it's a project that we're going to be able to work on, as I say, and that we can add something to, I need to know that. That's part, I need to know, if you want it A1, with gold foiling on the cover, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to help you with that.
Yeah.
But so Permanent Press, which we put out by Luke Healy earlier in the year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and Luke's obviously, he's big no-brow book. So he's worked with publishers before, and so he knows the ropes. But he was super clear about what he wanted that book to look and feel like.
Okay.
Okay.
And it was so useful. It's so useful. So
yeah, I like Luke a lot, actually. Yeah. He's a really funny guy, isn't he, as well?
He's hilarious. Yeah, he's an absolute top guy. But you don't need to kind of say, I want this paper at this weight, and I want this kind of binding and this kind of laminate on the cover. But I want to know the size. I want to know the format. And I want to know what, so Luke was like, I want off-white, pulpy paperback type interior paper. And I want an unlaminated cover because, that's the look and feel. I then took that away and looked into it, which is, and we came to the right stuff. But he was super clear on that early on. And that helped me understand, that vision for what the book was gonna look like. So that if you've got that, that can be really helpful.
Cool, nice one. I was going to ask you about a particular case. See, I know you don't have to completely cover what happened, Dave, but a projection. Is that out or is it just about to come out?
No, it came out small press day, so a couple of weeks back.
Right, cool. Great book and a really interesting, different kind of style.
Yeah.
And excuse me for fucking up the name. Is it Seekan Hugh? Is that the name?
Seekan
Wee. Yeah. Somebody I've never met before. Was that a new creator to you, or?
So CCAM did a book with Shortbox. Last year, that both Ricky and I got independently and loved. CCAM's work is great. The format was interesting. Clearly, a lot of thought had gone into it. It was just kind of someone we wanted to work with. So we approached CCAM on
that. Oh, okay.
We kind of do it a lot. We say, just if you've got a project you think we could work on, then get in touch. And, it's still a pitch in a way. It's just being, rather than a cold, kind of email just coming in, is solicited in a way. But, CCAM still absolutely set that book out in a pitch. Told us what she wanted to cover, the way she was going to do it, and gave us some examples of art. Brilliant. Let's do it. Absolutely.
Cool. Yeah, really imaginative style as well, isn't it? It's not something, a real nice surprise.
Yeah. It's kind of a refreshing approach to the medium, and it's a bit different. That's what really excited us. It's not panel to panel. It's not, kind of traditional layouts. It's collage. It's, the flow of the page is different, which asks, more review as a reader, I think, and that's no bad thing.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
I was actually trying to think of someone who you hadn't worked with, and I hadn't seen their stuff before, and they pitched it to you out of the blue. I was trying to think of, can you think of anyone that springs to mind there, Dave, that it came in as just a pitch and you went, oh Christ, that looks good, or you met them and they showed you something?
So
you must get pitched at con tables and stuff like that as well, do you?
Yeah, we do. Which is not a bad way to do it, but at the same time, I'm trying to sell books. But I understand, still an opportunity. So a quick conversation around that's absolutely fine. And we often get people handing us pitch documents, and we're obviously not going to read it then and there. We'll take it away and we'll take a look. Tane, I'm struggling to think of one, mainly because we have to be so tight with our schedule and what we're going to do. And this it's kind of sad for me in a way that. And hopefully this is part of it, that people aren't pitching to it with an understanding of that. And then, it's only sad for me because it means that we don't get to work on, more projects that come into us in that way.
Yeah. You're not a bottomless pit, are you, dude? Do you know what I mean? People can understand that as well.
Yeah, it's more of a, and hopefully, kind of talking about it in this way and covering it in a few different publishing models and, serials and graphic novels and so on. Hopefully it gives people a bit more of an understanding and expectations around the process, because I'd love to get like the perfect pitch come in and go with it as a project. But we're thinking that far in advance that we need to have a committed idea of what we're going to be working on. And normally the way we do that is we ask people if they've got something they want to work on in 18 months time,
Okay. Interesting.
Which is a brilliant segue. Dave, I think this has been a successful,
part of the
pitching episodes. I knew these were going to be fascinating. And Dave, you've been an absolute star.
Quick one more. And I know,
of course, mate.
I love to see finished projects that you can direct me to. So in that email, if you can direct me to something online, a book that you finished, even if it's self-published, especially if it's self-published, actually, because that's the hardest process of all.
Yeah.
That shows me you can finish a project, you can commit to and finish a project. So absolutely include directions and links and maybe even a PDF of a completed project, just as a reference point, because that gives me a lot as well.
Amazing. Very important.
He wanted to give you people so much information, we could not stop him. That's how good Dave White is. Well, you were speaking about your books, and I know you've got some stuff you wanted to discuss on the show as well. So tell us more, Dave. What have you got coming up?
Yeah, bear in mind, you kindly given us access to your Dropbox link. So we've seen quite a lot of stuff, haven't we, that's on its way and just come out. And brilliant stuff recently, dude. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. We're so excited about some of the stuff we've just wonderful books by just brilliant creators. But so we spoke about CCAM's book, which is just out, Tim's book earlier in the year, Luke's book earlier in the year, but the next
Metroland
Ricky finished off Metroland, which it was, yeah, I mean, we've been waiting for that for ages. I'm so glad you got it done.
I absolutely love that series. I've got to tell you, and I've told Ricky and Julia to their faces, but yeah. I do think that final issue is they've levelled up on that, mate. I really do.
Absolutely.
The art on it is just so clean. You know, Julius, so gorgeous. Yeah,
just beautiful. The colour palette is amazing. And,
yeah.
You know, Ricky finished the story he wanted to tell, which was something that's been kind of, yeah, he just needed to get that done, you know. So,
yeah,
yeah. But the next set of books we've got coming out, three releases for Thought Bubble. In September, that we're kind of finalising all the bits and pieces now. So we thought if we're going to do a massive hardcover book, we might as well do two at the same time. It's a sensible thing to do. So the first one of those is On a Sunbeam by Tilly Walden, which is a webcomic that Tilly. It's probably 18 months, maybe even 2 years ago now. She started. Yeah. And just ripped through it with kind of just ferocious speed, you know, kind of 30 pages a week type stuff in some cases. And so it's being published in the US by First Second, and we're publishing it in Europe.
Excellent. That's a good deal. Territory. Yeah.
Yeah, no, we're really pleased to be able to work with Tilly on it because Ricky edited the webcomic, so he's
oh, okay.
He's got a lot of affiliation to the book as well. So
I mean, well done Tilly for winning the Eisner. It's great news.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, you guys are due a little bit of that, dude, because you've really brought her up. You know, you've really showed her, you know, and edited her. I know you both, you and Ricky, I'm not going to say molded because she's, you know, she's a great talent, but you've certainly helped her along there. And I think she'd probably agree with that. So I think the credit's to you two guys, because there's some amazing books come out from you two.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully. I mean, we consider ourselves massively fortunate to have been able to work with Tilly. Ricky edits all of her books. I just kind of read them and kind of just sit there awestruck. I mean, if we're a small part of that, then I'm more than happy with that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But, More than anything, just an absolute pleasure to work with someone on, especially, you know, early part of her career, and she's just on a trajectory that's just not stopping. And as you say, and the Eisner win last night for Spinning, massively overdue in my opinion. I think she should have had a couple before now. But
second nomination, first win. So yeah, I mean that's great news, isn't it?
I mean,
and she's only what is she 14.
She's 8. She's 8. She's not 22 now. She's an old hand. But so on a Sunbeam, it's kind of it's a complete departure from Spinning, a complete departure from.
Okay.
I love this part. It's kind of more. So this is a story. It's a narrative, and it's about a girl called Mia from her life as a rebellious schoolgirl. To becoming part of a crew on a flying space fish called the Atlas, and they go out in the deepest reaches of space, rebuilding beautiful broken down churches and cathedrals and museums. And at the heart of it is a love story, but Tilly decided, as you know, I want to do sci-fi, so she's written a beautiful love story in a sci-fi world that she's built that is just incredible. I mean, Tilly loves drawing buildings, and this gave her an opportunity to do that. And the architectural stuff is incredible. As I say, the world she's created using science fiction as a vehicle is just full of these incredible ideas. Like I say, flying space fish, and created like a space school that Mia goes to. It's just incredible, and it's kind of, it'll be about 550 pages all in. Hardback.
Bloody hell!
We don't know where we're going to store it yet.
you're just saying that because your good lady can hear you talking, probably.
absolutely. Yeah, that's kind
not
of...
definitely not in your hallway, I presume. Yeah,
it'll be in the bath. It'll be in the oven. It's going to be absolutely everywhere. But yeah, I mean, I think although everything Tilly does is amazing, I think this is by far, in my humble opinion, you know, a best work so far, yeah. And it's going
to
be.
I think I talked to her about doing a sci. She was talking about doing a sci-fi book. I'm going to say a couple of years ago when we interviewed her at Thought Bubble. Mm. Yeah.
And she decided to do it as a webcomic. Just did it. And it's. I mean, the webcomic got great, huge amounts of praise and huge amounts of fans. So, but we're going to do it in a beautiful format. As I say, hardback, big square bound. It's going to be gorgeous. So we're absolutely delighted to be working with Tilly on that one. So you know, once you've done a 550-page hardback, you might as well do a 250-page hardback at the same time, which is Kat Chapman's book, Katrina Chapman.
Oh yes, I'm really looking forward to this. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the review PDF might have popped into the Dropbox. So if you made a chance,
oh really?
Look,
oh,
okay. It'll be there really soon if it's not there yet.
Oh great. Yeah.
So yeah, couldn't be any more different to Tilly's book, really. It's also bio of a time when Kat left university, didn't really have any responsibilities, didn't have anything to tie her down. She was an artist, but she stopped drawing, just didn't know where she was going. And so she decided to travel around Mexico with her then boyfriend. It's telling that story of when they were traveling. Their relationship was quite troubled. So they were going through some stuff at the same time. So you've got this juxtaposition of a relationship breaking down really, whilst traveling around this country that Kat fell in love with. I mean, Mexico, you've seen Kat's art before. And she's absolutely smashed it on this. It's a beautiful, beautiful book. So it's kind of part travel log as well. And kind of there'll be sections from her sketchbook that she took with her at the time. So we've got pages from that. It touches upon, you know, all of a sudden. And if you read Kat Zine, it's something that Kat does so well.
Yeah, we love Kat Zine.
Which is one of the greatest, you know, my favourite self-published serial. You know, just beautiful. But she was dropping in a couple of pages about Mexican food or Mexican architecture or a certain place. So it's almost like a travel log as well, interspersed with the story. And as I say, you've got this relationship that's falling apart, coupled with the awe and wonder of travelling around this amazing, amazing country. so it's really interesting. It's got a really interesting feel from that point of view. And it's Kat's first graphic novel. It's hardback. It's beautiful. So we couldn't be more excited about that.
That sounds brilliant. Awesome. Yeah, I'll certainly be getting a copy of that. Yeah.
I think when people kind of see it, I think they'll be blown away. I've not seen a more beautiful book for a long time. Kat is, and it's been an intensive process for her. She's worked so incredibly hard.
Yeah.
But the results, just because she's a perfectionist.
The thing about Tilly and Kat is they both just get on with it, don't they? There's no sort of grandstanding or, you know, they just get on and make good comics. And the comics are outstandingly good, you know.
They are hardcore. They just grind, you know, and work, work and work. And from the outside looking in, probably make it look a bit easy, but it's not. We all know it's not. Kat's book is going to be. And the last one is Retrograde Orbit by Christine Kaczynski. Which is another, and I don't know why we're doing sci-fi this year. We just are. It's another sci-fi book.
They say that sci-fi comes out during the darker times of political crisis, don't they? So, if you look at it sort of historically, look at when Star Wars came out. What's going on in the world? But
all the stuff around the wars as well, isn't it? I mean, First World War stuff, and that's a great show. So there you are. This is our input to that. It's fiction again, and it's about a character called Flynn, and her mum live on a distant mining colony.
It's a great cover, man, as well. Really good cover. Yeah, it's got a load of character about it, I think, you know.
Yeah, and So Christina's, I mean, she's not only is she an incredible illustrator, but she's got a wonderful design sensibility, and she came up with a few options, and that was the one we went with. They were all great, but that's the one she was happiest with.
Did she come to you, or did you go to her, or?
We've been hassling Christina for years to work, just because we love her work. She's an illustrator. She does a lot of illustrating children's books as well. So she's super busy. And again, it's her first graphic novel. It's going to be about 120 pages. So it's the biggest project she's worked on, and she needed to find time to be able to commit to it. So we were just overjoyed when she said we can do it kind of this year. Again, it's that sci-fi setting, but really dealing with it's a really kind of human story about, you know, what a home is, leaving it, you know, the only place you've ever lived, leaving the family you've lived with, wanting to go and do something else, and, you know, kind of everything that goes with that. And it's about, you know, kind of friendships, but again, in this just wonderfully created world that sci-fi gives you the license to just run with. So Christine's just got such a beautiful way of writing as well, and it's really accessible, and she just communicates really complicated ideas and emotions in just a really, really straightforward way that makes it look easy, but is intensely hard to do. So we've got a busy couple of months coming up before we get to Thought Bubble. But we're so excited about these three books. And if I could very, very quickly do a quick plug.
Of course, man. Yeah, completely. Yeah. Gone. Yeah.
We've got a deal in our shop at the moment to get all three books for a really good kind of discounted price. So, we kind of need that as well, because we need to...
Yeah, pre-order, everyone.
It's a good deal. And, we've been kind of overwhelmed by the amount of people that are taking it up. So thank you for letting me whip on about those. But
no, don't be silly. We love your books.
We're so excited for these three books, because they're fantastic. It's some of the best stuff we've done, and I can't wait for people to see them.
I would not be surprised if you met some of our lovely listeners when Thought Bubble rolled around. So
yeah,
come say hi. Pitch me.
Yeah. Don't open up that can of worms, my friend. Brilliant stuff, though. But do we have any other shout outs this week, gents?
I've got one, which is go to the Cartoon Museum. You should be going there anyway, because it's a great place. But our pal Rachel Ball has got an exhibition up on the top gallery of the new book she's got out, so I won't spoil it, but pop down to the Cartoon Gallery.
How long's that Cartoon Museum?
I think it's on for a good few weeks. I think the upper gallery tends to be a bit longer than the main floor. But don't waste any time, get down and see it. I'm surprised that somebody you've not worked with before, Dave, Rachel, because I know she's kind of that scene, isn't she? We see her at sort of signings and stuff occasionally, don't we? You know, she does Ladies Do Comics and stuff like that.
No, we love Rachel's stuff. I mean, she hasn't got any, she's got any number of publishers that she that work with Rachel, and I think she's got a couple of relationships with she works with
Blue? Bloomsbury as well, I think she works.
Rachel's stuff's fantastic.
Yeah, outstanding stuff. Mm. Yeah, really good. That's my only one. There you go.
Anyone else? Anyone?
We put out a hashtag ACP Pitch Perfect.
Oh, of course we did.
This week, and we've got a whole. To be fair, there's more than I could possibly read out. But it's interesting. I deleted this off the initial tweet when I put it out there, but I was going to ask for images. But some people did put images on their tweets and some didn't. As a rule of thumb, images, tweets with images go down so much better than those with just text. So if you're pitching your comic to someone, click your link. I'd highly recommend sticking an image
on
there.
I didn't see enough links in that response.
Okay.
We had some great pictures, but then not a link to where it could possibly be.
Buy it.
Yeah,
one stuck out was Kirsten, of her book 12X11 of Magic and Muses, about magical girls making mistakes and muddling in mysteries, mischievous monsters.
Oh, thank you for getting him to say that. That is worth it just for that.
There's a lot of alliteration there, which is ace.
Hey, there's his big word of the week.
Yeah. you can read that at x11comic.com. It looks great.
Nice.
I'll definitely go and check that out.
Nice.
Yeah, but if you click on that hashtag, you can see a whole wealth
of
great comics.
Them. We were planning to read out a few on this week's show, but there was so much information and great conversation that we haven't had time. So, like Dan said, check out the
And I think we've retweeted most of them, haven't we? We've been in it. If not, we'll be certainly going back and retweeting them and stuff.
Yeah, I've gone through everyone and retweeted it.
Yeah. Real. So, good shout.
There you go.
Look at us spreading the love.
From us spreading love about those comics, let's spread some love about some other comics. Oh, a lot of love. There's a whole lot of love. Oh, God, it's that part of the evening, isn't it? Jesus. sorry, everyone. I don't know what happened to me.
Welcome to the Soul Train.
Right, who wants to go first this week?
Go on, you go first, V.
Yeah. I'll keep it short and sweet because I know we've got some epic ones. I read issue one of a series this week on the old Comixology that I've heard about for a couple of years, but it's come out with a new ongoing series. It's from Black Mask Studios, and it is Oh Shit, It's Kim and Kim, number one.
Oh, yeah, you went nuts about this earlier in the week.
Yes, I mean, the cover already was awesome. It didn't make my cover picks of the week because that's really difficult every week. I'll talk more about that one week.
Keep that up, Vince, because that's really good.
Yeah, it's a good idea, that, yeah.
Good. Yeah. I'll quickly say it now. For those
cover
who don't,
corner.
Yeah. Or Got Wednesday Covered. I'm trying to create a hashtag, but it's going nowhere. Yeah. And when I do my Comixology browse every new comic book day, because I don't go into a local comic book shop on new comic book day because there isn't, you know, I prefer doing it on Comixology. And I'm just browsing through the covers, and if there's a cover I like, then I'll add it to the list, and then I'll just pick four, because that's all Twitter allows you to, the maximum of four images, and I'll just, here's my cover picks for each week. So if you follow me on Twitter, you can check out some just amazing art. I don't necessarily buy these comics, but the covers are just spectacular.
I'll tell you what it makes me notice is your eye to graphic design.
Definitely.
Because there's a certain style to them that I can see.
Yeah.
You know, that I know appeals to you.
Yeah. Occasionally one will pop in that isn't my usual. But yeah, I know what you mean. There's definitely a design eye. I've noticed as I'm picking them, I'm just thinking, oh, the ones I've picked this week, but...
Yeah, but they're very striking covers.
That's because I know you know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
So that's why I always pay attention, because I think, you know, I mean, I just like the thing shouting at the camera or something, you know, and that's about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you put your mind to it and you think, well, this, you know, someone falling or whatever it is there's a great idea. Is there one you put out, was it last week, the one that was a bit like a Mad Men? About, like, the intro to Mad Men.
Oh, the Ice Cream Man, which was
that's it.
It was just a very simple cover of someone falling out of a multi-story building.
Yeah.
But
I like
the image,
that.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard that's a good series, but that cover alone was just a winner, just epic. Hmm. So definitely, get.
Was it the Weatherman? Was it the Weatherman?
No, it was the Ice Cream Man.
Ice Cream Man. Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah.
It's getting harder every week to pick a cover though, because there's so. You know, I normally narrow it down to 10, and then I have to chop that down. but it's fun.
Well, do you do that Wednesday?
I do it Wednesday. I try to do it New Comic Book Day because I always have that browse, and I just scroll through. Yeah. And if there's,
should we all have a go this Wednesday?
I think that's a great idea.
Yeah,
just for 1 week. Well, I won't keep it up every week because I'm shit. But let's have a go this Wednesday and see if we. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll time it on the WhatsApp and then we'll post to see if any of us agree.
That's a good little shout.
Probably do it later in the day because sometimes, because of work or whatever, I don't get a chance to do it.
Yeah, me too.
So we'll set aside a time.
Before my beddy buys, because I go to bed beddy buys about 9:30, don't I? So.
Yeah, you do. You've got to make sure you have your warm milk and your rusk. Anyway, so there's that. But this, back to my comment, oh shit, it's Kim and Kim. This series was one that I've heard about a bit because I know that it had Eisner, it was Eisner nominated. I think they had a couple of miniseries. And basically the synopsis, the fighting Kims are back. Kim and Kim trade their denim vests and spike chokers for tuxes and gowns as they infiltrate the glitzy space colony of Santa Palma to try and con a master thief. But as usual, everything goes to hell and it's definitely Kim Q's fault. Come on, Kim, get your life together. Obviously that's synopsis.
He's gone Partridge.
But I did go Partridge. I did that just for you as well. I did that just for you. Now, obviously that synopsis plays to the people who probably already know the series. I did not know anything about it apart from the visuals of the two main characters. And I, for one thing, I didn't know it was a sci-fi space sort of action comedy about two bounty hunters / mercenaries who have now gone legit and become corporate. That's how this series starts. But if you don't know anything about this series, this issue is definitely the one to jump on board with. It's hilarious. The art's got a real... it's kind of a... I want to say a sort of Eastern sort of style. That, you know, there's certain animation and manga influences to it. But it's another thing I didn't expect. It's got cursing in this book. I really didn't... Well, I didn't think
like
it
that,
would.
We
do like it. It's definitely got... If you listen to this show and you like some of the spicy chat that we have, this comic book has that in it. I don't... There's one panel that I did show the guys on the WhatsApp, but I can't really talk about it because it is kind of a story spoiler. But when it happened, it was hilarious. Because a good timed curse word is just...
Yeah, exactly.
It's just the best.
Yeah, like saying...
Don't encourage him. It's not funny. It's not grown up and it's not funny.
Played for him.
I couldn't not do that then. Come on.
Is it true? All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. If this episode goes out late, you know it's whose fault it is. No, but this series is great, though. It's a sci-fi action comedy. I highly recommend it. The proper good action, a lot of sparky dialogue between characters. I kind of don't want to spoil it for you because, you know, jump in now. If you like the series before, you've probably already picked it up because from that synopsis, they're preaching to the converted from the sounds of that synopsis. But this is a great time to pick up this series if you don't know the characters. And I'm definitely in for the long run because it is really funny. And also, yeah. there's like a gambler with a cybernetic eye who falls into a swimming pool and his head gets electrocuted. Gotta love that, haven't you?
Yeah.
So,
Samara, and they've got a curse word in the title. So, oh shit, it's Kim and Kim, number one. That is my pick.
Ideal.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Next week. Who's going next?
Cool. Shall I go next?
Yeah.
Right, I'm going to go. What happens with me is, because I'm a child, is I get sent a comic and I think, right, I'll save that one. And I'll write a load of notes and I'll talk about it on the pod. And then I get a bit excited about it and I think it's brilliant. And then I decide to do a written review of it. So apologies if you've already heard this and you've read the written review. But it's a book that got sent through to me by Barry Keegan, who is an Irish creator. And it's called The Bog Road. Now, for those who live in South London, this is not about the A2, just in case you're unaware of it. It's written and drawn by Barry Keegan, colours by Chris O'Halloran. And George Patrick Gamma, he's got a cool surname, isn't he? Mm.
Before you get into it, I will say, if that had been on my Comixology browse, I would have picked that cover because
that
it's
cover.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. It reminds me a bit of the Great North Wood cover as well. Mm. It's like indented into the furniture of the environment almost. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's an interesting one, yeah. Letters by Hassan Otsami Elahu, published by Atom Diner. It's 88 pages, full colour. Just lay up the story for you. I won't spoil it too much, but it's based in a county in Ireland. And a man, a present-day man, goes down to a bog and he calls to a mystical creature that comes out of the ground who is a Sleogan. That's his name. I think it's Norse Sleogan. This huge sort of, I suppose, a bit like a sort of cross between a Minotaur and Swamp Thing, and a sort of golem comes out of the bog. And when I say bog, I mean sort of muddy, not the English format of the word. This creature is pretty scary. His first reaction is just to kick this man to the ground and sort of menace him. And what the man is there saying, he's saying, can you stop killing people? We've built a road, you know, through the land, and people are dying all the time on it, you know. And he's saying it's down to you. And through flashbacks, you realise this creature is a sort of ancient tribe of creatures who were nearly all hunted to extinction upon the arrival of Christianity in Ireland. But he isn't the only mystical creature, and there are other sort of magical creatures that appear. And I have to say, Barry has got an absolutely brilliant eye to design for these creatures. Did you see the page I put up on the review of the sort of stone... The old sort of stone thing that comes alive, and it's actually the head of a creature, and the creature shakes off some of the bricks around it. Gorgeous stuff, really, really, really nice stuff. So the man who's gone down to plead with this creature is a guy called Bracken, and he goes back and he tries to convince the town people that this creature is real. That at first they don't believe him, and then they run down when they see this creature and they tie it to the railway line, and this creature is he's run over by this intercity train that's coming towards him. And you get this real sense of the environmental message that this comic is sending out, you know. Also the sort of past versus the future, you know, and do we give in to, you know, buildings and railway lines and roads and cars and, you know, everything that is implied and happens when the future meets the past, you know. Really, really gorgeous stuff as well. It's got that real sort of folktale edge that's had me off researching a lot of the characters, which I won't spoil for you, but some of the sort of magical creatures that appear later on. The other thing that I was really impressed with Barry is his use of dialogue. So the dialogue of the men in the pub, for example, and the sort of the crowd that form, you know, to sort of batter this creature and stuff like that is very real sounding and very Ireland now. But the creatures that are surrounding him and these sort of ancient creatures, some who come alive during the story and some who are just there anyway, have got this sort of strange otherworldly sort of character to their voices. Do you remember when, I think I compare it to when Gaiman wrote in, is it The Endless? Is that the name of the characters in Sandman?
Yeah.
I think it is. And they have almost this sort of detracted from reality staccato voice, but it has this sort of depth of meaning to what they say. It's almost like a strange sort of, it's like comparing Shakespearean dialogue to dialogue now, isn't it? It means the same thing, but it's said in a certain different intonation and way and everything. It's politics under a microscope, really, when you look at it. It's the politics of the world that's changing around us, mob rule. There's a corrupt local politician and stuff like that. Really, really good. I would compare the artwork to something, a softer edge Charlie Adlard, possibly.
Okay.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Barry uses a sort of muted, he uses really rich greens and then some muted greys, and you get a real sense of the sort of twilight nighttime that he uses in it. And it really, really sets a scene. Really gorgeous stuff. If you go to his website, which is at barrykeegan.com, it gives you a link to SubCity. It's rare that we get a review copy through. Well, it's not rare because we're going to talk about another one in a minute. We get a review copy through, and I'm not happy in just having a digital version of it, so I ordered the hard copy, which I did. So I ordered the hard copy as soon as I read this, and it's a real quality book. I know a couple of our listeners, I think Sarah Harris said she's been looking forward to seeing this when it finally comes out. And I hadn't seen it. I hadn't had a heads up on it until Barry wrote into our Facebook page. So real, real thanks to him for sending this through. Mm. And Barry is a creator who I will now follow. And I think he's going to be a valuable and a serious voice. I know he's got a day job, and we've been chatting it up a bit over the DMs this week. But really, really worth getting a copy. Yeah. So if you go to SubCity or if you go through Barry's website, you'll find a copy of it. Good stuff. Okay, that's my one.
Nice. All right, and Dan, hit us.
We're just going to do a bit of a double team on this, aren't we?
Yeah.
I'll get the ball rolling. We got sent through some titles from Europe Comics.
Yes.
And there was a couple there, and I've read. I can't remember the bloke. Raptors. I think I read the first issue of that.
Raptors. Yeah, yeah.
And then I started reading the Eagles of Rome. I think that's the title.
Yeah.
And I'm absolutely loving that. But the first one I picked out was Desert Star. It goes under the Desert Star or Star of the Desert, depending on the translation. But this one just absolutely blew me away. I was just,
me too, mate. Yeah, totally.
I started reading it. I thought I'd read a bit of this and then do something else. And I just blew through it. And I thought, where's this story going to end up? And one of the things with digital is you don't know where, like when you're holding the book in your hand, you say, right, I'm coming to the end of this. But with digital, that experience is kind of gone. So I hit the end and I was like, oh, fuck, I want the rest of this like now. I want to know what happens next. Hmm. And I think kindly the people from Europe Comics got in touch and they'd sent along the second part of it. And I was, you messaged me, didn't you? And you said, oh, it's in the Dropbox. And I was like, yes. And I fucking jumped on it. But it's a Western. It's 1870s in America. And the main character is a guy called Matthew Montgomery, who's kind of like an aging civil servant. He's a senior official in the Ministry of Defense. And he's got like his family life, his wife and daughter. His daughter's taken off of a gentleman. It's not worked out. And she's due to come back home. And he's very kind of, I told you that weren't going to have work out. And his home life is not great. And as he goes to work, he kind of takes out his frustrations with his secretary sexually.
I think people call it hate fucking, don't they? Yes, I believe that is the phrase that some people use.
He seems generally absolutely sick of, not interested in life. He's just kind of
he's not a nice guy, is he? I think
no, not at all. No, yeah, he's not a nice guy. Like when you first kind of introduced him, you're like, Christ, this is the guy we're going to be going through this journey. But when his daughter's due to go home, like tragedy strikes and his life is just absolutely ripped apart. Yeah. I'm not going to go too much into it because I don't want to spoil the stories and I don't like reviews which are just verbatim tell you the whole story from start to finish. And he goes, sets out on the trail of the person who thinks committed this atrocity against him, and he finds out a name called Jason Caldry, and he abandons everything from where he lives in Washington and travels out by a stagecoach to Topeka on the Texas border, which is, it's a lawless frontier town where they're building the railways, and it's like you mentioned, Tony, it's Deadwood. It's just, he goes from very upper class, kind of everything's well regulated, to this absolutely lawless lawless kind of frontier town where it's kind of just sex, drugs, violence.
It's just brutal, isn't it?
It's really
town
brutal.
Is just you just survive. And there's these indigenous people, prostitutes run, and they're just like treated like sex slaves, and it's horrid. And there's no John Wayne character in this, is it?
No.
There's no sort of handsome cowboy wandering around. It's just horrible people everywhere. Yeah.
The character's given opportunities to sort of step in and maybe do something, and you think you've got to do something here, and he doesn't, because that's not him. It's an interesting character because he's almost sociopathic.
Don't know whether he's going to step up. There's whole bits of it where if it was an average, I'm going to say, I'm not drawing this conclusion around everything that's written in America, but certain areas of American comics, you'd think, oh yeah, they be riding off into the sunset at the end of this story, and he would have beaten all the baddies. But you don't expect that from him, do you? There's moments where he steps back from doing something, and he can't bring himself to do it. He's scared.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which is like complete. If he was kind of a senior kind of office worker, as it were, and you've gone into like from that to like this lawless town where people are getting shot and attacked and killed for whatever.
He looks absolutely great, though, I have to say.
Yeah.
He looks, if anyone's seen Connery, and is it The Great Bank Robbery or that movie he did where he's got the white beard, black moustache, and sort of mane of white hair on his head? He looks incredible.
I was sort of picturing him like played by kind of like a Gregory Peck, with kind of like a Sean Connery kind of look, very kind of a man who thinks very much of himself and very noble. And
there's a darkness behind him.
We can't give away too much without getting too much into the story, but as the kind of story rolls along, you sort of see many facets to this character, and it's good to not see a badass who sees injustice and then acts immediately.
Because there is a death wish element to this, isn't there? It's plain. I think it says on the back.
Yeah.
There is a death wish element, and there's a certain parallel to be drawn by that. But there's moments in it. There's give away too much, but there's two moments I just want to mention. One where he's managed to get hold of this prostitute who he thinks can give information to him. And she's just this spiteful woman. And he ends up almost raping her, doesn't he? It almost goes too far, and you think, oh my God,
this is fucking dark,
horrific. Yeah. Dear me, yeah. And then something happens, which I won't ruin. But and the other bit is something he thinks. There's the dialogue's really well translated, I have to say, in this. So I don't always find that with Bond SNA books, but this one it is. And he ends up killing someone, and he says the stench is appalling. I must have blown open his stomach. And you think, fuck me, that just tells a tale. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it paints a picture. Yeah, And there are a couple of twists in it. You just do. I know we were definitely not going to spoil them, but there's a couple of twists in it where you think, oh, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, it's really worthy twists at the end of the story. Like it's laid out, and
you
it's
think,
just
oh,
really
okay.
well done.
Yeah.
Even the main kind of antagonist, Jason Caldry, he's just an absolute monster of a man.
Yeah.
He kind of runs this Topeka with an absolute iron fist, and everyone's just totally shit scared of him, and this is portrayed really well in the story because he has the main bar, and he stands aloft on the balcony with a staircase going up to him, like literally above everyone, and you can only really see him in silhouette and shadows. And they get like the native women to dance on stage for him, and if he likes them, they brought up to his room. If they're not, he just passes them over. But he's got absolutely no compunctions about killing people, and he's got this thing about when he's working on the railways, he wants to keep everything as close to nature as possible, and he's got no problem killing the people because he thinks if you're weak enough, you're not weak enough to survive out there. That's part and parcel of it. You shouldn't be out there.
The art by Enrico Marino is fucking astounding.
Yeah.
I've posted, what, 3 or 4 pages online, and they've all got like multiple retweets. And he draws the heat. There's a couple of pages where he draws him just sort of travelling through the sort of snowbound scene. Yeah. And it's so impressive. Oh, my God.
The detail and the kind of the colour choices he makes. Night scenes, like they're awash with blue. And the art is just so painstakingly researched and done. It's a real craftsmanship.
Yeah,
I love it. And I think, seeing more of his work is just absolutely amazing. I'm blown away by the guy.
Yeah, and he does change up styles. You know, when you look at Raptors, it's a completely different style.
Completely different,
isn't it?
Yeah. I wasn't even sure that was the same artist until I kind of checked, and I was like, bloody hell.
Yeah.
It's the same dude.
Yeah, this is shaping up for my book of the year, I guarantee. I've also got the digital download of 1 and 2. I downloaded on Comixology issue 3, and then I thought, now I can't be just doing with these as like, you know, computer files. So I bought the French versions of it by Dargaud are real oversized, like really oversized, but hardback books. And I think they're only like £11.50 each.
That's good.
For the volumes, but they are just gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
You did exactly what I did with the Swordmaster.
Exactly, yeah. Right.
Because
it's
too beautiful not to own it, isn't it?
It is. Here, I want to hold this. Yeah. But, it's not for everyone. If you don't like the old sex and the old violence, they say in the Clockwork Orange, and keep away from these because this is extreme.
Like maturely handled. It's not
yes.
gratuitous or put in there for no good reason.
Yeah. No, I mean, not at all.
They both serve the story. It's fascinating. I would highly recommend you pick them up. If you head over to europecomics.com, you can find all the titles there.
They're currently on sale on Comixology.
On Comixology, Europe Comics have a sale on where it's normally like the first few volumes of a lot of their titles, lots of different ones.
I think
it's
the first three on this one, because I think the fourth volume's just come out.
Yeah.
The first two are Marini, and the second two are by a different artist. Very good artist as well, but I have to recommend Marini above the second two.
I would recommend, don't look at the two, 3 and 4 are prequels.
Yeah.
And I think if you read the synopsis, you might give away the story for the first two. So maybe stay away from looking at them.
Okay, cool.
It is a kind of a bit of a spoiler because it has to be.
I think likewise, as I did with the Swordmaster, to truly sort of buy people in, on the Awesome Comics Talk group, we'll post up some panels of what the book looks like, because it'll speak for itself, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
No, quality. I mean, Europe Comics are just fucking...
thanks to Europe Comics for sending these through. We've got a few more left, haven't we?
Yeah.
Two more to read. But the Roman one I'm going to get into next, I think.
Yeah, that looks
brilliant.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah, cool.
So there you go. Okay, Dave, finish us off.
So, with great pleasure and enthusiasm, Vince. it's a reread for me. So it was Ricky's birthday a month or so ago, and we always buy each other comics, surprisingly, for each other's birthdays. And I got him some Judge Dredd collections that Rebellion do a fantastic job of putting out, the Day of Chaos storyline and Trifecta. And because I got them a few years ago, I'm just... I was kind of blown away by them. 2000 AD was one of the, you know, really cemented in my kind of, when I was younger, as one of my, you know, one of those gateway comics that get you through to kind of leveling up from like Roy of the Rovers and Beano and the Dandy, and kind of getting you into, got me into like the big, you know, X-Men, Avengers and so on. I was really keen for Ricky to read them, so I bought them for his birthday. But then I was like, do you know what? I really want to reread that. Really quickly, because it might be stuff that your readers know about, but Day of Chaos was a single story told over kind of a year almost in weekly Judge Dredd strips. Huge story, 50 issues long, really involving, really huge story, was kind of redressed the balance of a lot of the structural problems that the kind of mega city universe had forced itself into with just all of these incredible stories. I highly recommend that. But the trifecta, it kind of follows on from that immediately, plot-wise. And it was just a really interesting idea that Al Ewing, Cy Spurrier, and Rob Williams came up with, which was to start one story in different strips. So the trifecta story started with a Judge Dredd story in one prog. In the next prog, the second strip started, but it started from a totally different place, so there was no indication that they were interlinked. And then The next prog, the third strip started again, so seeming like they're telling different stories.
Yeah.
And over the course of about six or seven issues, they started tying closer and closer together, to the point where I think the cliffhanger from the Judge Dredd strip went straight into the next strip.
That's
so slowly but surely, and they didn't tell anyone. So slowly but surely, it became apparent that these stories were interlinked. And it finishes in the last prog. And I'm no 2000 AD historian by any stretch, but I think it's probably the only time they've done it where the entire issue was one story, and it was these three strips coming back together to finish off the story. And it's three very different strips, very different feels. One's quite funny, but then it starts as kind of a comedy almost, and then finds its way into the main story and becomes really serious. But not only is it a very well told story, classic Judge Dredd, from a format point of view and a planning point of view, it's just super interesting to see how they did it and how they used that serial storytelling, which you're so familiar with, but you get your weekly issue. You read through the stories and they're entirely separate from each other. And they just played and subverted that in such a brilliant way. And as I said, the fact that they didn't tell anyone, they left the readers week by week to work out what was going on. So it's reprinted in a beautiful hardback edition by Rebellion. I'd heartily recommend reading Day of Chaos as well, which is in a couple of trades beforehand. But yeah, it's just Judge Dredd, such a classic character, much history, so much, kind of and formative for so many people, and to use that, their kind of flagship story, to do something so interesting. And it, like I say, it's just a great story anyway, and it just weaves together beautifully. So yeah, I reread that, and heartly recommend it.
Well, who can turn down a great story and a great comic? And we've talked about an awful lot of good comics this week. My show notes are going to be a nightmare, but in a good way. And hopefully you lovely people got a lot of information, added some more to your wish lists, etc. Let us know what you thought about the show, as always, or if you've got any books you want to send us, etc. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. There's another email, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. That's also a special one if you want to send us a letter for our comic, Awesome Comics, which we're going to be shifting at a convention very soon.
Oh, I got a bit of fan art this week.
Oh, nice one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah.
So who knows what's going to be in the next issue, but hopefully it'll be you. And if you haven't got an issue yet, where can they get it, Dan?
You can go on to our Awesome Comics Big Cartel store. We'll put the link in the show notes, where issue 1 and 2 are available both in print and digital.
Yes.
So check that out.
And we love you people so much, we want your letters and ask us about the comics and everything else in between. So, yes, send your letters to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod, where we'll be doing all kinds, because we all have the keys to the car, and who knows what could happen. Lord knows if Tony gets the keys what he's going to do in it.
I've got the keys, baby.
It takes a long time to clean those seats. Anyway, if you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. Likewise, if you just want to talk about comics, talk about the wonderful sequential medium, events, making your own comics, etc., without any hard sell, then go to Awesome Comics Talk on Facebook. As always, there's great conversation on there. I love reading it. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, you can leave us a lovely review. That would be lovely. We haven't had one in ages.
No.
All a little bit sad. But you can also subscribe. It helps get the word out. Plus, if you do the Spotify, we're legit.
Yes.
So we're on Spotify now. So get on there. And
put us on a playlist. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, we'll be on a playlist. We'll list your plays. I don't know.
Be all over your playlist.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll be. No, I don't know. It's just going badly. But there are other networks you can listen to us, like, for instance, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
Pod Oswaldo Mowbray.
So if you're on that one, then.
Come on, you know what that is. Come on. You know that, Vince. Come on.
Do I?
Yeah, it's the Tim Roth character in Hateful Eight. Because I'm.
Desert Star
made me watch Hateful Eight. I was going to go with Pod Daisy Domacue. Yeah. Yeah. But I thought you might get that one.
We had a pre-recording chat about The Hateful Eight where we just absolutely love it.
I'm going to have to watch it this week.
Yeah. Oh, mate, do it. Yeah. Fucking nice.
But thank you for listening. Where can people find us online, etc.? Tony?
Neveronanything.blogspot.co.uk. There's a few things gone up there. S-O-S-E-Z-O-H-Y-Z on Twitter. And don't forget that if you want to come and watch two really terrible panels, well, good panels, but hosted terribly, come to OK True Believers on the 5th of August, the summer event. Yeah, you go to OKTrueBelievers.com. You can book your tickets. And I suggest please do pre-book. Myself and Vince, I'm chairing a panel on writing, and Vince is chairing a panel on doing the drawings, I think it's called.
Yep. We're going to absolutely fudging smash it. So there you go. You get a link to that. Dan, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Lovely. Yes. You can find me on
Twitter. I caught up today, actually.
Oh, cheers.
My reading today. Yeah, nice, very good.
He's on form, that nice boy, isn't he? It's going well. Yeah. Yeah, as always. Dare we doubt him? I don't. You can find me on Twitter at Just the Diablo. You can find out more about my comic at The Red Mask from Mars.com. And Dave, our wonderful guest, you've been an absolute legend this week. Where can people find you and your wares, etc.?
On Twitter, we are at Avery Hill Pubble. My fault, I messed it up when I set up the account name. Instagram, it's at Avery Hill Publishing. And if you want to buy some of our comics, it's averyhillpublishing.bigcartel.com.
There you go. Get on board.
And get on board that Great Northwood. I love that book. That is a fucking amazing book.
Tim's absolutely destroyed it. It's just so good.
Yeah. Big shout out to Marrow, because I sent him his copy this week, and he was having a big shout out to Marrow. Actually, he was having a little operation, so I understand, weren't you, Marrow? I hope that cheered you up, mate. Yeah, feel better soon.
Yeah, hope you feel better soon. Hopefully, this has done the trick. And we hope you all have a brilliant week. So, thank you very much for listening. From Dan, Tony, Dave, and myself, read loads of comics. Check out the indie scene. Prepare your pitches to be absolutely perfect. And as always, what do they do, Dan?
Gotta stay awesome.
Yes. I can trust it. I can trust him.
You can't trust me.
Yeah. See ya, folks.
See ya.
Bye.